Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore.
Covering the Informers. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, yo, it's me, Mickey Rourke. How are you?
Mickey Rourke.
You know, man, don't even worry about it. I'm going to take this kid and sell him to the cartel or something.
Mickey, what were you doing in 2000?
I want my board.
Is that the build up to the bit?
Yeah, I guess so. One of my favorite behind the scenes stories is Mickey Rourke traveling to Russia and like living among the Russians for multiple months to prep for his role in Iron Man 2, and then them cutting all of his character business out of the movie.
Yeah.
Thereby negating any reason for him to have spent months living in Russia.
That's really funny. That's like, what's the movie that they tried to cast? We covered it, I think. Oh, it was Gotti. How they tried to cast, not Danny DeVito, the short guy that's in Home Alone. Oh, our cats are going crazy. Sorry. Enjoy the background noise.
That was crazy.
They might hiss and meow really loudly. They're still trying to get along a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know who doesn't get along?
Who?
Some of the people in this movie.
Me in this movie.
Me in this movie. But yeah, we're here to cover The Informers, which you're right, has Mickey Rourke in it.
Yes.
What's Mickey Rourke's 2007, 2008, 2009 period?
This is like right when did this movie come out exactly? Is this 2008?
Before his big like major.
This is the year of his comeback. His short-lived comeback, to be clear.
Yeah, because it was the year before.
Like, he's in Sin City, but, like, under so much prosthetics, you won't even know it's him.
Yeah.
But then there's The Wrestler, which he gets his, I believe, Academy Award nomination for.
I'm pretty sure he does.
His Best Actor role, and everyone's like, Mickey's back. And then they start casting him in movies, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's why we didn't hire this guy, because he's really difficult to work with.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the stories. What are the stories?
I don't know like specifics, but he just has a reputation for being kind of, you know,
tough on
difficult
set.
And a bit of an asshole.
Not showing up on time, not remembering his lines.
I don't want to say exact stuff because I don't know the exact stuff.
Sure,
but,
yeah. But when we hear those terminologies, there's like a pool of problems that you and I are very aware of that we can attribute.
Because let me tell you this. He's in The Wrestler, he gets the Academy Award nomination, then he's in this. He's in a few more non-existent movies, which he probably filmed before The Wrestler came out.
Uh-huh.
And then his big like follow-up to The Wrestler is he's in Iron Man 2 in The Expendables.
Yeah.
And then after that, he is right back to doing direct-to-DVD action movies.
Hey, don't discount Immortals, bitch. Come on.
Immortals?
Have you seen Immortals?
No, I've not seen
Immortals. It's not good.
Doesn't look very good.
No. Henry Cavill.
But like, he's right back. He does Immortals, The Courier, Black November, Java Heat, Dead and Tombstone. Like, these movies don't exist.
No, they don't exist.
Can I show you the poster for a movie he's in coming out this year that I really want you to look at?
Yeah.
Yeah, here you go.
Oh.
Would you like to read the billing at the top of the page?
My God.
What is this movie called?
Not Another Church Movie.
Who does it star?
Well, I have to read the parentheses under the subtitle. So the title is Not Another Church Movie. The subtitle is in parentheses. This is not, all caps underlined, a Tyler Perry movie. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there's three actors on this poster. To the left is Jamie Foxx as God. In the middle is Kevin Daniels in drag?
Yeah. Doing a Madea thing. A Madea, I guess.
And then on the right is Mickey Rourke as the devil, who I can't tell is if he's doing drag or if that's
just
like...
No, he just has a lot of plastic surgery.
Well, no, it's not even the plastic surgery. It's like he's wearing like a low cut.
No, he's like a cowboy.
Cowboy guy. Yeah. Do you notice in that poster that Kevin Daniels holding a chainsaw?
I do now.
Because I pointed it out because that's a thing that could easily be missed.
I missed it until you pointed it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where Mickey's at nowadays.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So this is like in his comeback era. Yeah,
this is in like his, if we were to do Mickey Rourke on this show, the comeback era would be like 4 movies long and then it would end.
Was this, you say comeback, so was he like big prior?
He was big in the 80s.
See, I'm not cultured in like Mickey Rourke.
In the 90s, I should say, not the 80s.
The 90s.
Well, the 90s, he was like coming out as like, you know, hot, fresh, new talent. I don't typically associate fresh when I'm looking at Mickey Rourke, who looks, in fact, rather well done.
Oh, my God.
But
that's really funny.
Yeah, that's kind of the Mickey Rourke story.
But what are his, like, 90s main bits? Like, I'm looking at his IMDb, and I'm seeing a lot of, like, 4.0s, 3.0s. There's The Rainmaker, which has a 7.2 on IMDb, 72 Metascore. It's got, like, a few good actors in it.
I'm sorry. I did mean 80s. Like, he's in Heaven's Gate, Body Heat, Rumblefish, Coppola movie.
Oh.
Year of the Dragon, Angel Heart.
Okay. Okay.
I was skipping the 80s for some
inconceivable reason. I do see what you're saying, though. Yeah, it does seem like the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s were big for Mickey, and then he kind of disappeared. And then he comes back in the early 2000s a little bit, being in some action movies that people actually see.
Yeah.
So, like some Tony Scott's and Robert Rodriguez movies. Wrestler's his big comeback. Everyone's like, oh my God, Mickey's so talented. Whatever happened to this guy? And then they put him in Iron Man 2 and the Expendables are like, all right, we're sick of this guy.
Wow.
He's just been doing low budget action movies ever since. But he's in this movie.
He's in this movie and he's in a small role in this movie. Who has a big role in this movie, Jeff?
Billy Bob Thornton? Kim Basinger? That's probably it, right?
Would you even say that they have big roles?
I would say Billy Bob Thornton has a big role.
Okay.
He's like consistently popping up.
Reason why I say that is because The Informers is a movie that doesn't really have a plot to it. Let me just read the tagline on IMDb for The Informers.
Yes.
There's two, but they basically say the same thing. Loosely connected stories capture a week in L.A. in 1983 featuring movie executives, rock stars, a vampire, and other morally challenged characters and adventures laced with sex, drugs, and violence.
Yeah.
And any description there, like, was there like a cohesive through line plot?
Okay, so the thing about this movie is that it's based on a Bret Easton Ellis collection of short stories.
That's cool.
Called The Informers. Bret Easton Ellis, satirical writer. You would know him for writing American Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Very accomplished author, controversial guy. Some people think that his work is sexist, whereas some think that his work is satirical of sexism.
Hmm.
So he's like a big topic conversation. He's an interesting writer, so there's at least something there to like delve into.
Yeah.
And he, this is the screenplay. This is, I believe, the only screenplay he writes based on one of his own works.
Hmm.
He takes this collection of short stories that he wrote in 1994
mm-hmm.
and clasps together into a screenplay.
Okay.
And then he is very unhappy with the final product of this movie.
Is anybody?
He basically said like during production, they kept cutting things out and out until the movie became incomprehensible and made no sense.
Yeah.
And so he didn't do any press for this movie aside from what he's contractually obligated to do and has said that the exact quote... from someone who seems extremely humble is this movie doesn't work for a lot of reasons, but I don't think any of those reasons are my fault. Yeah.
We all like to think that, right?
We do like to think that, don't we?
Yeah.
But, yeah. However, I will say, supposedly this movie was originally 150 pages long and they cut it down to 94. So there is a lot that gets cut out.
Sure.
Including, insanely, a whole plot line about vampires.
So where... I'm just going to hop right into something with you here.
Yeah.
Who's the vampire in this movie?
So there is one vampire in this movie. The kid that Mickey Rourke is going to sell to like some gang is the implication in the movie. That guy shows up as a vampire.
Mickey Rourke?
No, like, you know how there's that guy who comes and, like, tries to buy the kid from Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
That guy is a vampire. That, like, in the vampire plot line, like, the implication is they're kidnapping these kids to sell them to a vampire cult. Which is going to suck their blood. Instead of them just being pedophiles. Which is what the movie, as you watch it, you're like, okay, this is sex trafficking. In the original version, it's not sex trafficking, it's vampirism. which, I will be frank, probably knocks the movie up like at least a half star for me if there's just randomly vampires in it.
Well, I was looking for the vampire and...
He was there.
You're talking about the scene where the guy comes in, he's talking to, not Mickey Rourke, but the other guy.
Mickey Rourke's like cousin or nephew or something.
That scene.
Yeah.
That guy's a vampire.
Yeah, that guy's a vampire. Because he's like, we've come for the kid.
Yeah, I heard that part. Yeah.
That's the Gak guy.
That's not convincing to be a vampire, though.
Well, no, because the they cut all the vampire stuff out of
the movie. Why did they include a vampire bit in the tagline?
I don't know. I really don't know. Accurately.
This is on the IMDb tagline that there's a vampire in this movie.
It's very possible that the guy just kind of like, that they left that in by accident. Because the book has a substantial vampire plotline in it, which gets cut.
That's so misleading for the audience.
Yes.
To go see it for the vampire.
You expect a vampire and there's no
vampire. It's 2008. Vampires are hot right now.
Yes.
Vampires are off the fucking chain right now.
My wife has been on a vampire kick recently. I watched 80% of the movie Van Helsing last night.
Van Helsing.
Yes. I will not say any more.
No, so, you will say more.
I will not say more.
No, you will say more. Come on, Jeff. What do you feel about the Van Helsing movie with Hugh Jackman?
No one has ever been. No one has ever been more miscast than the guy who plays Dracula in that movie.
Really?
Who's an actor I actually like, Richard Roxburgh.
Really?
Yeah, he's...
You think he was miscast as Dracula?
He's so bad. He's so bad.
I don't think he was that bad.
He's so bad.
Like, just in
you
his,
know what he's good in? He's good as the villain in Moulin Rouge.
Is he, like, too over the top for you? Like,
no, he's not. He's not nearly over the top enough. That's my problem.
Oh. Who do you think
his accent isn't very good.
Because Van Helsing's what year? 2005?
2005.
Who would have been a great Dracula villain in 2005? Half of Hollywood looked like vampires, so this wouldn't be that hard to like figure out, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't be too hard. I mean, I don't know if I can there are plenty of great Draculas.
What's Charles Dance doing in 2005?
Charles Dance would have been great.
Because Charles Dance is Dracula, or no, I don't think he is Dracula. He's a vampire lord in Dracula Untold.
He is.
And he's the best part of that movie.
I will never see that movie.
Dracula Untold?
Yes.
You should.
That is a movie that I will not watch, probably, ever.
You should watch Dracula Untold.
Why should I watch Dracula Untold?
Not because it's a good movie. It's not a good movie. But you should just watch Dracula Untold.
Okay.
Jeff, I find that it's easier to convince you to watch bad movies than it is to watch good TV.
Honestly, true. Because a bad movie is at least only 90 minutes. I am watching a TV show right now.
What TV show?
Band of Brothers.
I'm going to throw up.
What? It's a good show.
It is a good show.
I sit there saluting the TV.
Salute the whole time?
Yeah, the whole time.
Are you going to watch The Pacific afterwards?
Of course I am. And then I'm going to watch Masters of the Air.
Masters of the Air. I still need to watch Masters of the Air.
I'm not going to talk about the Dark Universe. I was about to just talk about the Dark Universe, but I'm not going to do that.
That'd be a wild tangent for this episode to go to.
Well, it is about vampires. But we're not...
So not that wild.
Okay, so The Informers.
So the Dark Universe.
So basically everything we've encompassed so far about The Informers, this seems like, you know, if you heard what we're saying, you're probably like, this movie sounds like it's probably incomprehensible. And the answer is yes, it is.
It is very incomprehensible. There is no, like, main plot. It's just things happening. There's no, like, everything is business, but no business.
Yes.
Like, there's stuff happening, but it's useless stuff happening.
This is the structure of a movie that works significantly better as a book.
Yeah.
Because then you can get into the character's interiority.
Yeah.
Instead of this movie, which, like, it has, Bret Easton Ellis is kind of influential in developing, like, this type of LA story in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, LA cultural, you know, representation is kind of somewhat indebted to him.
Yeah.
I think of Grand Theft Auto 5 as like a great example of this.
Okay.
Have you ever played Grand Theft Auto 5?
I've not played a single Grand Theft Auto movie.
So, movie.
Game.
Yeah.
Tells you how.
Grand Theft Auto, I mean, Grand Theft Auto is mostly just, like, indebted to, like, Heat and Michael Mann. But, like, the kind of, I don't even know how, like, weird, dark, psychosexual LA vibes that Bret Easton Ellis writes about are very influential going into culture in the 2000s and the in 2010s. And this movie has a lot of that in it without any of, like, the substance. Because it ultimately, just you watch the movie, you don't understand who any of these people are or their relation to each other, except on the most, like, baseline level. And then Winona Ryder pops up for a scene, and then she disappears. And then she appears again. And you're like, okay, what are we, what are we doing?
We've not mentioned Winona Ryder once in this episode.
We've not. Because she's not really in the movie much. She has, like, one good scene.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she's just, like, something that Billy Bob Thornton is lusting after while cheating on his wife, who he is cheating on her with.
This felt like one of the first movies that, well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe I should say that. Well, because you're coming to us after we've talked about, ladies and gentlemen, The Last Word.
Yes, of course.
And I have a hunch.
A movie that I definitely didn't accidentally watch the wrong version for, which is why we're talking about this movie today.
But I just was going to say, like, especially for this movie, and I think I may have said that I felt the same way in The Last Word. This is, I think, the first movie where I feel like, okay, Winona, they're definitely casting, like, above 30 Winona.
Yes.
Intentionally. Like, they do something with her hair that makes her look a little more older, more distinguished. She's not, I don't think.
They're letting Winona age.
Age.
And I'm saying age as she's, like, 35.
Exactly.
She's not really aged.
Exactly.
But.
Because two weeks ago, we talked about Sex and Death 101, where, like, Winona's, like, they're lusting up Winona.
Yeah.
And, like, of course, she's in this, like, beauty spot where she can kind of do both, I think. Mm-hmm. That being said, like, I think you and I would both agree that we're kind of, like, welcoming that era in Winona. It's, like, it's okay to, like, we can start to, like, see her.
Actresses should be allowed to play in their 30s.
Yeah.
Like, men are allowed to play in their 30s all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see so many movies where there's, like, a 35-year-old man and a 22-year-old girl as, like, the man of, like, the romantic interest in the movie.
Women in movies either have to be, like, in their late teens, early 20s, or their mothers or grandmothers. And mothers is, like, 40s, maybe early 50s, and that's grandmothers, like, 60s and 70s.
Not to disrespect this movie, which I know a lot of people like, and I am led to believe is good, but Anyone But You, the rom-com that came out this year, Glenn Powell is 35 and Sydney Sweeney is 26.
Yeah.
And that's, like, you know, a Hollywood age gap thing that's been talked about a lot.
Yeah.
But there is this kind of inherent, like, thing about women, just keep them in their 20s, and then eventually they can start playing respectable roles in, like, their 40s.
Yeah.
And thankfully that is starting to change.
Starting.
But slowly.
Very slowly. Like, it definitely is, like, cultural employment gap for women. And it sucks. How horrible is that to think that, like, you know, as men, as, like, male actors, that there is never, like, an interrupted period in your career where you have to stop working, wait until you reach a certain age, you can play a different role.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen for men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could still play the jockey 18-year-old at 30, like John Travolta proved.
Yes. You know, he's still doing that at, like, 80.
Right.
60,
he's still fucking doing, like, Speed Kills.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But that's my point.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't. Like, women, once you reach 30, you have to essentially wait 10 years so you're old enough to play a mom.
Yes.
And, like, what do you do those 10 years?
Yeah.
Like, ugh. Like, if that's what Hollywood's going to do, then, like, we should start, like, a support fund. It's like, you're a woman in your 30s, so you got to go out on unemployment for 10 years so you can play mom. Here's a support fund. It's called
even, like, the, like,
Female Actors in Their 30s Support Fund.
Like, when Winona, you know, I first just want to say it's nice to see her in a movie that has a production value again, even if this movie is god-awful.
It does have
because
somewhat.
This movie, like, you look at the frame and you're like, they had some money. And I don't mean a lot of money, but, like,
some money.
A few dollars at least.
Well,
because we've been watching, as we talked about, like, Sex and Death 101 and
The Last Word.
Last Word and the 10 Darwin Awards, where it's like, this was shot for $50 and a bag of Skittles. like,
And fresh dogs.
Yeah, some fresh dogs is catering.
Yeah.
It is nice to watch this movie and be like, okay, there's like a budget here, even if it's all going towards like vile trash.
Yeah. So to that point, I mean, like, I don't even know how we would even like talk about the plot events in this movie. Like, I'm not sure how we would even accomplish that. Basically, there's...
I think we would just have to do one of those things where we just take a character at a time.
Okay, so...
And some are, and or a plot line at the time.
Because there's like four or five plot segments.
Yeah, I can do the Billy Bob Thornton one right now and knock out like five characters.
Let's do it. Go.
Because like, okay, so Billy Bob Thornton is a executive for some unnamed movie studio. All he says is that he made a movie about a kid who became the president.
Yes.
It's like really light sat. Like, I know Brady, I know that they cut a lot from this, and Brady is also known as satirist, but like, this is like the laziest satire ever.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I made a movie about a kid who was president. I'm like, oh, I get it. He's like a fake. He's kind of fraud. Like, you know, he doesn't really make intrigue. He doesn't have any interesting ideas. I'm like, oh shit. I didn't get that. He made a movie about a kid who was the president. Oh my God.
Why'd you talk like that?
Like, you watch the, okay, he's like, he is estranged from his wife, and his kids.
His wife, who is played by
Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger.
Her name's Laura. And then his two kids, Graham, played by John Foster, and what the hell is his daughter's name?
She's not really that important, I don't
She's
think.
Like not in the movie that much, obviously, because
she's not really like a big role.
Yeah, well, he has a daughter as well.
Billy Bob Thornton. Definitely like asleep at the wheel in this movie.
The thing about Billy Bob Thornton is that that's kind of his like
thing. Yeah.
His thing is that he's very subdued.
Yeah.
You kind of have to know how to use that. Or he's big. He's like subdued or big. Those are his two modes.
Yeah.
He's either doing Sling Blade, like French fried potatoes, I reckon. Or he's doing like his Fargo, this, like, I'm Billy Bob Thornton. I'm going to kill you real bad.
That was good. Whoa. That was actually really good, Joe.
Thanks. Oh my God. Someone just crashed their car because they weren't expecting that. And now fire and rescue workers are digging them out of the wreckage as my voice is playing. It's like the firefighter's just like, oh my God, will these guys shut up? As he's crowbarring the car door open.
Empty car seat in the back.
Yeah.
Depraved.
So the Billy Bob Thornton is estranged from his family because he cheated on his wife with Winona Ryder,
who's playing an
Cheryl,
anchor woman.
An anchor woman named Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird segment of this movie where it cuts away and like Winona's like with Will Ferrell on the like in the in like the studio room. It's really weird cutaway
it's
to
really
Anchorman.
Weird
I wasn't
cutaway.
Expecting that.
Yeah. Paul Rudd walks in.
Yeah, Paul Rudd comes in. Brian Fantana. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
At some point, she makes out with Steve Carell.
Yes, so Brick Tamland. Yeah. To be correct. Sorry. Yes. Don't forget about Champ Kind. One of my great things is knowing the names of all the Anchorman characters.
Oh my God.
But he's estranged from his family because he was cheating on his wife with Winona. However, he's decided to call quits with Cheryl and try and rebuild his family. He's going to move back in with his wife and wants to be a proper family unit again.
And that quickly goes...
Yeah, it doesn't really go well.
It goes away.
His son, Graham, is in college. He's also like kind of a drug peddler, right? That's the idea.
Something like that.
He's a drug peddler and he, you know, uses his dad's credit card a lot. He stays in a lot of grandma's hotel rooms with his girlfriend, Christy,
played by Amber Heard,
in an early role. And Amber Heard spends over 50% of this movie nude.
Yeah.
Because I had the exact quote for why she agreed to that, besides, you know, just general sexism in the industry, is she said, I took on full nudity for that film because the script was based on Bret Easton Ellis's book, and I wanted to represent the raw intensity, the important character aspects of what makes the story so dark and compelling and twisted. I took a big risk and took a gamble, and in this case, I lost. The movie turned out to be a big flop, which is, just distressing. It's upsetting.
It's upsetting. She's nude in a lot of the movie. There's quite a few like sex scenes in this movie, gratuitous sex scenes that just, you know, but this movie screams like gratuity for no reason.
Yes. Like whatever your thoughts are on Amber Heard as a person, like she should not have been subjected to spending the entire, and there are, you know, movies where actors spend the whole movie and the movie is good and tasteful and respectful, or it's transgressive in an interesting way.
Yeah.
And it's trying to say something with that.
Right.
But it's not trying to say anything with that.
Yeah.
You could argue that they cut that stuff out with the edits. I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. What matters is the movie that gets sent to the AMC.
Yeah.
And that movie you're watching and you're just like, yeah, this is just she's nude because they want people to go see the movie with Amber Heard's boobs in it.
Yeah.
That's like the goal here.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I'm not much like, I don't know like that much about like Amber Heard's career from like this point onward and all that stuff. I do know like she, at least prior and shortly after this movie, is consistently cast as like the sex appeal object in many of the movies. Which like, again, you can make the case that there are like some actresses out there who are comfortable with that, who are okay with that, like, thing of their career, that they see like an artistic expression in characters of that nature.
Sex is a part of movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it is part of the draw of movies, not to get like pornographic about it, but like there are movies that operate on sex appeal. And like there's a tweet once that was like, what is a movie if not a place you go to see beautiful faces, huge? Where it's like you go to see like kind of attractive people.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's a part of the whole gumbo of cinema.
It's the business. It's the business side of it for sure. Like how many movies that are spoofs on movies? Is there always a scene about boardroom executives talking about an actress's boobs?
Yes.
My first thought is like 2005 Peter Jackson, King Kong. When you talk about, it's like, we got to film that love scene with such and so and so and all that other stuff. Like it's to me, like my thought behind it all, it's like it's very that element of movies, as tasteful and artistic as it can be and has been proven to be able to be, comes down to being very much like a business sort of thing. It's like, yeah, we want to make this movie, we have this newer younger actress and she's gonna be nude for half of it, so at least we can cash that check in.
Yes,
like just very kind of blasé like that,
which is big gross, and this movie not good, doesn't pay off. But this fan, Graham is dating Amber Heard. Billy Bob Thornton takes his family out to tell them all that he is, you know, going to reforge the family.
Yeah.
At the fancy restaurant they go to in L.A. However, they filmed this movie in Uruguay because it looks older because L.A. is so modern now. It's movie set in the 80s.
Yeah, it's like cheaper and it would cheaper to film out there. And it looks like an 80s version of L.A., which is grimy.
Actually, specifically, they did not film any of the Billy Bob Thornton stuff. And Greg refused to travel.
Yeah. Billy Bob and Winona.
Yes.
They both were like, I'm not fucking going to Earth.
Which is why all of their scenes are set inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he brings them out, and across the restaurant, he notices that Winona is also dining at the same place.
Yep.
He gets up to use the restroom after she does. He follows her into the bathroom. Kim Basinger clocks that he has done this and sees that he's up to his old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns on him after, you know, initially believing his overtures.
Yep.
She has also hopped up on Valium for most of the movie.
Yeah.
She's taking drugs to, like, relieve her stress and depression about this whole situation,
and she's having an affair with her son's friend Martin.
Yes.
Martin and Graham are kind of in like a polyamorous,
it's a throuple
relationship with Amber Heard, Christie. Yes. And Graham's sort of segment of this movie is him not feeling okay with that.
Yes,
that's really what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's just him kind of being like, I don't know if I like this.
Yeah. He's like, maybe not. Maybe we don't do
maybe
a thruple.
Maybe we don't do a thruple anymore.
It's a great character arc for him. I think he should have won the Academy Award for it.
My God.
But that's really the extent of that storyline. That's all there is to it.
Because then it sort of branches from there. Who's the father and son segment where the dad's just trying to get his son?
Whoa. Let me finish up with Billy Bob here for a second.
I thought you were done with Billy Bob.
No,
excuse me.
He links up with Winona. I finished with Graham, thank you very much.
Well, you didn't finish with Graham because that's the final scene of the movie when he sees Christy dying on the beach.
That is Christy. My mind had turned that into the Hawaii people.
What?
My mind had been like, oh yeah, that's the Hawaii guy.
Oh my God.
All of the young white men in this movie look exactly the fucking same.
Could not pick them out of a lineup. They look the exact
like
same.
Like I said, I've been watching Band of Brothers recently.
Yeah.
Which is a show that inherently I was like, on the second episode, like, I'm going to have difficulty keeping all these guys apart.
Yeah.
But then very quickly, like, establishes a look, a specific thing about all of them.
Yeah.
And even though they all kind of look similar, you're like, okay, I know that that's Garnier. I know that that's Winters. I know all these guys.
Yeah.
That's Lipton. Mm-hmm. This movie, there's like a scene where there's like five young white guys standing in a room together. And I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are.
They're wearing the same fucking button up stripey and 5-inch seam shorts.
Yes.
and canvas shoes. Yeah.
So, which is why I got it mixed up.
It's easy to.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Graham, the last scene with Graham is like, because Christy throughout the movie, Amber Heard, is like complaining that she's not feeling well.
Yes.
But it's like passed off as like she's just not eating or whatever. Because she
Graham confronts Martin, is like, are you sleeping with her aside from Arthur Rumpel? And he's like, no.
Yeah, that's a weird scene. But then he goes to the beach to see, oh, because somebody calls him and it's somebody who we
I need to use the exact phrasing from the Wikipedia article to shout them out.
Okay.
Graham tells Martin he feels adrift in his life, as if he does not have anyone who can tell him what is right or wrong. His whole life has become a series of casual encounters and light banter, which is covered over by a pharmaceutical haze. Mr. Okay. Wikipedia editor.
Okay.
Good job on that one.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
Graham seems to be making the first steps by moving away from his alienated narcissistic lifestyle. When one of Martin's lovers calls Graham to tell him that Christy has become ill and is lying out on the sand for some reason.
For some reason.
He drives over to the house to see her, even though he sees that she has developed lesions, presumably AIDS-associated sarcoma, all over her dying body. He seems unable to take care of her and take her to the hospital. Instead, he kisses her once and leaves her lying on a towel on the beach dying alone on an empty stretch of sand.
So,
if this movie was good, that would be a really like heartfelt and sad ending, but
it's not good.
I don't understand any of the shit that's happening.
For me, it's like I didn't quite clock the AIDS thing until like I remembered that they tease it earlier when they're watching like a newscast because it's LA in the 80s, the AIDS.
Yeah, that there's the AIDS disease going around.
Epidemic is going on. And so when she was sick, I did kind of have that lingering guess of like, oh, is this like AIDS? Because it's like LA in the 80s. Like, is that what they're teeing up here? But yeah, and then there's no reward because, like you said, he just kisses her and then leaves. And she's just there like, I'd like to go to the hospital. Why are you walking away?
The last frame is Amber Heard like dying on a beach. Which this whole movie is dying on a beach.
This whole movie is dying in sludge.
That's the end. That's the Graham Christie storyline. Back with Billy
that
Bob.
That does wrap up like half the movie right there.
Billy Bob keeps trying to reconnect with Cheryl. He's like doing a triple agent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Kim Basinger says she's going to leave him again. And he tells Winona he's going to come to her broadcast awards that she's going to be at. And Kim Basinger's like, I'll go with you to that so I can see her. But then the next day you come home and you leave.
Mm.
You pack up again.
Mm.
That's the end of the two of them.
Yeah.
Winona, because I do want to talk specifically about her for obvious reasons, gets one scene to herself in this movie. She's frustrated by Billy Bob Thornton. She's driving. She reaches into her bag for her cigarettes.
Oh, yes.
Pulls out the pack. It's empty. So she goes to like a rinky-dink diner.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Goes inside, goes to like the cigarette machine. Remember when those used to just be in diners? That's funny.
Do you remember, like, I think they have them in gas station and mall bathrooms that you could get condoms from, like, those little, like, coin slot machines. Yep. They still have those.
I have not seen them.
Probably in, like, rink-a-dink gas stations.
Yeah, if you go to, like, you know, Central Indiana.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you Central Indiana gas stations has condom slot machines.
Yes.
In the bathrooms.
But she buys some cigarettes. She can't find a lighter. Suddenly, a guy walks over from a rock band. Which is another storyline in this movie, about a rock band guy named Brian. Who's just
is that his, the same guy? Is he in that group? I thought that was just like folks.
I think that's him, right?
I don't remember.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
But regardless, he comes over, lights her cigarette. Asks
I
her
thought
for
he was a vampire, by the way.
He does look like a vampire. Yeah. Ask her for an autograph. She signs it, and then she orders a garden salad and a glass of water. And she kind of she plays this scene well, but there's nothing to it.
Yeah, there's
it's really hard to judge Winona's performance
I
in
think
this movie.
You and I are just trying to.
Yeah, no, we're trying to because she doesn't have anything to fucking do.
Exactly. We're trying to because it's Winona Ryder and a lot of things that she does is innately good.
Yeah.
But it's
she is talented.
She's very talented. But you could put Tom Hanks in the scene or Meryl Streep.
You can't spice up dry chicken. It's still dry. Oh my god! Oh my god! Sorry, firefighters. that's really the end of the Winona thing. There's a rock star who flies in. His whole thing is he flies in, has a bunch of sex,
and
just
kind
of
a lot of drugs.
Does a lot of drugs.
Is kind of hard to work with.
Yeah, and then he beats up a woman
who we've met before.
Maybe
I don't remember her.
Then there's the Hawaii thing. I think we just did that whole rockstar segment in under 30 seconds.
I think we did too. Yeah. Yeah, there's really nothing else to his bit. He's just sad, depressed, drugged up, having a lot of sex, beating up younger people.
Yes.
He's having sex with underage teenagers.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. Is like his agent's like, why you say boo to all these young girls then, isn't it? He has like a comically British agent 15, on the phone.
Like 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like,
why you say boo to all these young kids, isn't it?
Oh my god.
Blimey, you shouldn't be doing that. That's illegal. Oh my god, turn the you got all these young girls, isn't it?
Hi, Stuart.
Yeah. This guy was on Epstein's flight log, this character.
Yeah. He was.
So we're in Hawaii. One of the like Graham's friends goes to Hawaii with his dad.
That doesn't make any sense. The whole premise is that it's in LA in the '80s.
I know, right? It's funny that there's like a whole section that's set in Hawaii.
Are we sure that they're in Hawaii?
Tim Price is pressured to go with his father, Les, on a trip to Hawaii.
Okay.
From the synopsis.
Okay.
So, yeah, one of Graham's friends goes with his dad, played by Chris Isaac, who is like a musician who's acted a few times. He's notable for being in Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me as Chester Desmond. It's a great performance by him. Okay.
Just keep.
I see what
keep,
you're doing.
Keep talking.
They go to Hawaii. His dad's like an old horn dog, and he starts chatting up two women at the bar who are from Chicago.
Chicago.
And his son and Tim is like, Dad, you can't be cheating. No, you can't like start hitting on all these women with me here. And he's like, Come with me. Do it with me.
Yeah.
As dad's like trying to get him in a four-way.
The son is clearly like not. Yeah. He's like, Dad, come on.
He walks away and he goes to the beach where he meets a girl that he likes.
Yeah.
And he brings her to dinner with his dad. They sit down. And then he lights a cigarette and the girl's like, smoking's bad for you. And he's like, well, I'm going to smoke if I want to smoke. She's like, are you gay? And his dad's like, what are you, gay, son? And then he leaves.
Yeah.
And that's basically the end of his story. Eventually his dad comes and finds him. He's like, sorry, I called you gay. And he's like, I don't care. I have nothing to say to you. Like that's it, right?
It's the classic like teenager going on a vacation with a parent.
That is
the ending of it. Because I thought it was going to end this way of like the dad slept with this kid's crush.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be like that kind of.
No, it's just
thing,
that they both like, you gay? And then he's like, no, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah.
And then we never see him again.
Yeah.
The final section, saving the best for last, is the vampire section. So there's this dude named Jack. He's a doorman at Christie's apartment building. We see this once or twice. And then he goes back to his house, and Mickey Rourke just shows up, who's playing his uncle, Peter. And he's like, hey, I'm going to stay here for a little bit at your house. And Jack's like, you can't stay here. And Peter's like, I think I will. So Mickey Rourke just posts up at his house with like his drugged up girlfriend.
Yeah.
So then we randomly cut to Mickey Rourke driving a van. And he's just driving and he parks the van. And there's like a little kid on his skateboard going home from school. And Mickey Rourke just gets out of the van, grabs the kid, throws him in the back of the van.
Hi, Stuart.
And they bring the kid to the house. And Jack comes home and finds a kid tied up in his bathtub. And he's like, oh my God, Pete, what did you do?
What is happening?
And Pete's like, oh yeah, we kidnapped the child and we'll sell him to this gang.
And immediately it's like sex traffickers.
Yeah, and you're like sex traffickers.
Yeah.
Not really, but.
But, yeah.
And then Pete's out one night and suddenly the gang guy shows up.
Yeah.
Jack opens the door and he's like, hello, I am here for the child. Yes. Can you invite me inside? Yes. So Jack's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know nothing about no kid. And the vampire guy is just like, you did me poor. He does not talk like this, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
for fun.
He's not he's talk like so this. He's dressed up like mean? Any fucking California douchebag yeah. kind of guy. He doesn't even have fangs. I never saw fangs.
Wait, they clearly cut the vampire out of the movie. Brandon Routh was cast
like,
as a vampire.
You're trying to make it a vampire.
No,
it is not a vampire in the movie.
He's actually a vampire.
No, he's not.
Brandon Routh was cast as like the main vampire.
Routh.
Yeah, Routh, whatever yeah. the fuck it is. And they cut all his scenes.
Good.
But he's like, what do you mean? You don't have the kid. And the guy's like, I don't know nothing about no kid. And the guy's like, you will pay for these. And then Pete comes home later and he's like, what's up? And Jack's like, a guy came looking for the kid. I told him no. And Pete's like, we got to get out of town now because the vampires are coming for me.
Yeah. And then Mickey Rourke is like, you got to kill the kid. It'll be a lot better yeah. than what they're going to do.
He's like,
to
you got
to
kill the kid. And then we got to get out of here. And Jack's mm-hmm. like, I have a job. And Pete's like, the vampires will suck your blood. You will be dead.
He doesn't say that. There's no vampire rhetoric in this movie. You're trying to force it into the movie, Jeff.
I think a lot about there's a great tweet where it's like Avengers meeting Blade. Will anyone help me with the vampires? Please. There are so many. Captain America. No. Because you never see any of the other Marvel guys dealing with the vampires. It's just him.
It's just Blade.
And there are seemingly a lot of them.
Oh man.
So Jack goes to the bathroom and comes back with blood all over him under the impression he killed the kid.
Right.
He'd actually just sliced his hand open and then cut the kid free.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
While they're driving down the street, Jack looks in the rearview mirror and sees the kid running away. He feels good that he has saved the kid. Instead, they flee to Transylvania to find the...
You do not. Jeff is lying to
Mickey
you.
Mickey Rourke. Well, it's actually the sequel is about Mickey Rourke as a vampire hunter.
Oh, my God.
He's just like, I want my bird.
All right. Is that it? I think that's...
That's actually like all of the plot lines.
That's the entire plot line to The Informers. And if folks who are diehard fans of this movie want to correct us, guess what? Fuck you. The movie's terrible.
Can I read you a Bret Easton Ellis... quote.
Sure.
He said, it's hard to tell now, but it was supposed to be like criminals and vampires and girls and young people. These were things that I recognized and a lot that I missed. But it's the director's version of the script, and that's just how it is.
That's excellent.
So he's like hyping up the vampires.
Oh, sorry. What is that?
What?
Hello? Come on in. Hello there.
Oh my God, it's Dracula.
Are you doing this shit now?
Jeff, I come in for the episode on The Informers.
Hey, Drac, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff.
Blah,
sweetie.
Blah, blah.
How are you boys doing? Dracula, first off, thank you so much for coming. It's broad daylight. Yes, the sun does not bother me all that much anymore. It's complicated, but
you sound like the Swedish chef.
Don't insult Dracula. That's so rude, Jeff. So you're here to talk about Inform. Yeah, but here's the thing, Drac. You're not really in this movie. They kind of cut out all the vampire bits. Oh, yes. Yeah, see, I was talking to Brent Easton. And you see, vampires, they sort of are kind of pedophiles.
Which
there's a lot of pedophiles in Los Angeles. And so he wanted to kind of...
the accent is shifting as he, like, continues
Jeff,
talking.
Don't interrupt Dracula, for fuck's sake. Oh, I can see you guys are about to wrap up the episode here. Wait, so
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Were any vampires involved in the box office of this movie? Did they suck any of that money away?
Listen.
This movie was shot for an $18 million budget.
Jeff.
It made $382,000.
Those were all my tickets. I went and saw this movie.
You apparated into a bunch of bats and each one of them bought a ticket.
Yes. I wanted to see this movie so many times because, you see, I didn't see vampires and I thought to myself, well, maybe I just wasn't looking hard enough. So I saw this movie 200,000 times. And I could never find a vampire, so there are no vampires in this movie. But, gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure to meet you all. I'm going to go fly away.
Wow.
I can't believe Drac visited us again.
That was crazy.
It's the second time Dracula's come to the show.
I know. I was not expecting
that
at all.
He sounded a little different this time.
I don't know what you're talking about. That is so rude. You kept interrupting
maybe
him.
Maybe he had a cold.
Making fun of his accent.
Asshole. The prince, the Lord of Darkness can afford a few shots across the bow.
Whatever. We have a guest here for an episode, so we got to wrap things up.
Yeah, Dracula, he left.
No, okay.
So, movie comes out. Like I told Drac, it makes $382,000 on an $18 million budget.
Oh my God!
Tremendous flop, tremendous loss. Literally, nobody sees the movie. Is the problem here?
Well, there's like 8 different movies called The Informer. Yeah. What about this movie is an informer? And also,
it's
by the way,
the name of the rock band. The name of the rock band is The Informers.
Could have fooled me.
More of a thing in the book, I'm sure. It gets absolutely panned by all critics as being basically evil and maleficent for no reason.
Yeah.
You need a smarter director. Like the reason that American Psycho, the movie, works so well is because they brought in a female director to kind of reframe that text.
Yeah.
And make it about like the inherent like it's a satire about Patrick Bateman.
Yeah.
And that's why that movie is so good. This movie, it's this guy. We didn't even mention the director's name. Gregor Jordan. This is the most notable thing that he directed, probably. He did Ned Kelly, which was a movie that I know of.
Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide?
No, with Heath Ledger and Orlando Bloom. But this is basically the probably one of the more notable movies he's done. He's really done something super notable.
Wow. That's crazy.
Regards to Winona coming out of this, it's just like another one of those non-existent movies that she's in.
Yeah.
That pockets this game. It's just her trying to constantly work.
Mm-hmm.
Just to reestablish a foothold. And I'm sure doing a movie like this, you know, so LA-centered, does, like, after some time in San Francisco, does start connecting her with people. And people are like, oh, well, she's working again in the city.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are getting pretty close to her really, like, coming back in real movies. Mm. The next movie kind of exists. Private Life of Pippa Lee.
Yeah.
And then we're only 2 away from Star Trek.
You keep building up Star Trek. I get it. It's a big movie. It is a big movie. But, like, you know,
the first time she's in a commercially successful movie since Mr. Deeds.
So, you know, pretty yeah. big for her. But
people watch Star Trek and they're like, oh, Winona Ryder. I remember her.
For like 2 scenes.
Yes. Like I said, she's not in it much, but it immediately is followed up by Black Swan, Dilemma, Frankenweenie. Like real movies.
Sometimes all it takes is one.
All it takes is you popping up in Star Trek and be like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And now she's playing a mom.
Now she's playing a mom.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about Star Trek next week. Next week, we're talking about The Private Lives of Pippa Lee. Get ready. We're going to blow the private secret open.
I was going to say, that was a good, I was trying to think of like a private joke there, but that was good.
Yeah, the private life is going public.
Yeah.
But that's all we have on The Informers, unless you have anything else to say.
Nope.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Make sure to tune in next week for Private Life of Pippa Lee. It's another Keanu, so we'll be joined by Cole Bradley again. The stealth Keanu.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. You know where we're at. Pop into the Reddit, @TrollTingPod, @TrollTingPod, Twitter, or Instagram, TrollTingPodcast@gmail.com, @JeffWSweeney on Twitter for me. Special thanks, as always, to Rebecca for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music that's now taking you out. Have a great week, folks.